Tonight on Earthwatch, a tribute to the late Father Paul Mayer.
My name is Father Paul Mayer.
It's Father Paul Mayer.
And it's an honor for me.
And it's an honor for me.
To be with you this morning. We have the most powerful weapon of all. The weapon of nonviolence.
The weapon of nonviolence.
The weapon of the human heart.
Mahatma Gandhi taught us.
The power of the human spirit.
Is the greatest weapon that we have.
That was civil rights leader, environmentalist, and global humanitarian, the Reverend Paul Mayer, who passed away on November 22nd. I'm Robert Knight, and we shall hear Father Paul in conversation with WBAI, Earthwatch, and 5 O'Clock Shadow. So please join us for an Earthwatch celebration of a conscience for the generations.
And I believe that our teachers today will be our young people.
They will teach some of us old veterans.
New tricks. And I have come here to learn.
The bell for freedom still rings. Sorrow to me, but does it bring to know the bell of freedom still rings? The hammer for justice still pounds. Heavy is the beating sound of the hammer for justice that comes. Stop and see. When will we feel what we've been missing? That the man in the moon must have found. 'Cause he looks upon us with a frown. To know that me and the baby still starve. Millions of babies still starve. We can't have the biggest heart if millions of babies still starve. And the innocent ones still die. We can't value life too high if the innocent ones still die. When will the world stop and listen? When will we all stop and see? When will we find what we've been missing? That the man in the moon must have found. 'Cause he looks upon us with a frown. Light of truth we won't let shine. Tell me, has the world gone blind? Light of truth we won't let shine. Long as there's life, there's still a day. And I know that we can find our way. For as long as there's life, there's still a day.
This is Earthwatch on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and with great sorrow, we acknowledge the recent death from brain cancer on November 22, 2013, of the legendary priest of peace, the Reverend Paul Mayer. Father Paul was a friend of this program and of WBAI, whose Pacifica mission of peace was consonant with his own unflinching humanitarian values of peace. As WBAI's former chair and current local station board secretary recently noted, quoting, "Our friend and colleague, Father Paul Mayer, died at 82 years. Very sad, but what a life! Many folks might have seen him at anti-war social justice and environmental demonstrations without even knowing his name. He was also a great friend of WBAI and a very learned individual. Here is to my friend, Paul Mayer, fighting the good fight, wherever the winds take him. Love you, Paul." Signed, Mitchell Cohen, end quote. Paul Mayer was born to German Jewish parents on February 24, 1931, under the racist tyranny of the Nazi regime. After his family immigrated to the United States, he converted as a teen to Roman Catholicism, wherein he was ordained as a priest in the mid-1960s, following 18 years as a Benedictine monk. He was defrocked in 1971 after defying the Vatican's medieval gender protocols by having married a medical mission nun in 1966. He was a constant presence at civil rights and anti-segregation protests throughout the American South. He was also an early opponent of the Pentagon's carpet bombing of Vietnam and other parts of Southeast Asia, and a stalwart opponent of the escalating Soviet and American nuclear weapons stockpiles. He engaged in anti-draft and anti-nuclear actions with his equally radical former priests, Daniel and Philip Berrigan. Throughout his liberationist career, the Reverend Father Paul Mayer continued to consider himself a priest, a Navajo shaman, a yogi, and proponent of Mahatma Gandhi, as well as a Jew, stating that, quote, "Jesus never stopped being a Jew, and frankly, I don't think I could stop being a Jew, even if I wanted to," end quote. Father Paul toured the world with child victims of war and was a ubiquitous and humble but inspiring presence at protests, such as the Sane Freeze anti-nuclear weapons campaign, protests of the U.S. overthrow of the democratically elected Aristide government in Haiti, the U.S. invasions of Iraq and overthrow of Libya, and the Obama administration's escalation in Afghanistan, the proliferation of nuclear power, and the multinational anti-ecological policies that have contributed to global warming. In other words, Paul Mayer's public work over half a century has truly defined him as a conscience for the generations. This is Earthwatch on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI, and I'm Robert Knight in New York. And in today's program, we shall share some precious moments with Father Paul Mayer in his own words, including recent conversations with your host on Earthwatch and 5 o'clock Shadow. Among those, his commiseration with the people of Japan after Fukushima, and his affinity with the spirit and mission of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. This is Earthwatch, and our processional counterpoint on this memorial tribute is a seminal composition by Father Paul Mayer's ethical contemporary, Pete Seeger.
To every purpose under heaven. Everything turn. There is a season turn. And a time to every purpose under heaven. A time of love, a time of hate, a time of war, a time of peace. A time you may embrace, a time to
this is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. I'm Robert Knight, and in today's program we celebrate the real birthday of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. There was a major event in Washington, D.C. overnight celebrating that fact, which would have been the beginning of the first full day of the 85th year of the life of Dr. King, which was taken away by a gunman's bullet at the Lorraine Motel in 1968. The event that took place in Washington was a rally, an interfaith gathering on climate change is a moral issue. It was arranged by an interfaith group to celebrate not only the social, political, racial, and economic advances that were advocated by Dr. King, but also implicitly the ecological and the morality of the preservation of the earth against the tools of war and rampant industrialism and economic injustice. And we are honored to be joined now live by one of the key organizers of that event, Father Paul Mayer. Welcome to 5 O'Clock Shadow.
Oh, thank you, Robert.
What is the idea behind a gathering of people from many faiths and cultures in Washington, D.C. overnight on the 15th of January, the real birthday of Dr. King, in order to combine his moral, political, and, as you assert, the ecological or environmental impulse of his work?
Well, first of all, I want to say how happy I am to be in your program, which I always consider one of the premier programs on WBAI. It's an honor to be here, Robert, and I'm happy to hear your health is feeling better.
Thank you.
But we chose Dr. King's real birthday as opposed to the legal holiday, which I feel has often... I think one of the ways you can neutralize a person's powerful prophetic message is by giving them a national holiday, building them a big monument, and naming institutions after them, and then you don't have to take the their radical message seriously. You know, so we chose that day because we wanted to remember that Dr. King not only spoke about I Have a Dream, one of his famous and beautiful speeches, but also that at one time he said America had become a nightmare. And he focused on the four-headed monster of racism, war, militarism, economic injustice, and I'm forgetting one now.
Well, that's the terrible triplets he spoke of.
The trip, yes, indeed. And we feel that if he were still alive, he would focus on climate change or global scorching, which IMAC, the group that coordinated yesterday's events, the Interfaith Moral Action on Climate Change, feels is also one of the great moral issues of our time. And Dr. King would surely have shared that perception with us. And so we felt the time had come to have what we called a pray-in for the climate, which was a powerful day. And I'd be happy to tell you a little bit about it, Robert, if that's appropriate.
Absolutely. We're very eager to hear.
Well, we began with a short worship service at New York Avenue Presbyterian Church, one of the venerable churches of Washington. It was actually Abraham Lincoln's church. So maybe we're helping to free this nation from the slavery of climate change. And we had a beautiful service there, and fittingly, dramatically, after a short service there with people like Rabbi David Saperstein, one of the great leaders of Reform Judaism, and Reverend Bob Edgar, who was formerly the Secretary General of the National Council of Churches and a former congressman, and great people like that, and we were blessed in having the MC skills of Jackie Patterson, a wonderful young woman who leads the environmental program of the NAACP. And after that service, we had a procession down Massachusetts Avenue to the White House, and we had this beautiful papier-mâché globe, this image of Mother Earth, and it was carried, interestingly enough, by Dr. James Hansen of NASA, who is one of the great climate scientists of this nation and probably of the world, and I think is becoming increasingly more of a threat to the establishment. But he led this procession to carry the globe and to put to sleep the myth that, you know, science and religion are somehow opposed.
Paul, I had the honor of speaking with Dr. Hansen some time ago, at the time that he was being suppressed in his revelation that at the time, 8 out of the 10 prior years had recorded the highest average global temperature on record.
That's right. He's been very courageous, and he's receiving appropriately more and more heat. He recently has come out with another major study on the ice melting, you know, and it's really quite terrifying because the UN report has just came out recently to the effect that in less than 1 year, an ice sheet larger than the whole United States has melted. So things are escalating very rapidly, and it's very beautiful because Dr. Hansen feels very deeply the importance of linking this issue with the communities of faith, with spiritual people. So it was quite beautiful to see him carry this, our Mother Earth. And while we were processing, our Buddhist monks and nuns were beating the prayer drums. Then we arrived at the White House to begin our official prayer in for the climate. Well, we had different speakers. We opened it with different calls of prayer. We had a Native American woman who burnt the sage, and the Jewish shofar, the ram's horn, was blown, and then we had powerful Islamic call to prayer taken from the beginning of the Quran. And then our own Reverend Bob Coleman, right here from Riverside Church, said an opening prayer. And then we had three parts of the service. The first was the celebration of the earth, and we had a rich variety of speakers. I'm not going to be able to mention all of them, but people like Reverend Richard Cizik, who interestingly is one of the leaders in the evangelical community, which has a progressive wing that is speaking out more and more on the issue of climate change, and they have been partnering with us. And we had Reverend Yearwood, who is a wonderful African-American minister who is the coordinator of the Hip Hop Caucus based in Washington. And he spoke about the fact that, as he put it, climate change is not just an issue for white middle-class people with Birkenstock sandals, but that the people who are the most hard hit by climate change are the poor and the most vulnerable, not only in the United States, but all over the world. And we saw that recently here with Hurricane Sandy. The people who were the most affected were the people in some of the high rises there in the Rockaways and some of the urban centers, who were the most vulnerable and who were the least remembered and the worst provided for during that crisis. What a scandal. So we were fortunate, by the way, to have Father Juan Carlos Ruiz from the Sunnyside area, and he was one of the main supporters of Occupy Sandy during that crisis.
Father Paul Mayer, the world is now embroiled in wars, many, if not most of them, fomented by the United States and currently the Obama administration. In Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, Yemen, Mali, Somalia, and elsewhere, not to mention the tremendous bombings, missiles, and drones that are now nearly ubiquitous on this planet. One of the most revealing items, aside from the revelations of Dr. James Hansen, is the report that the single largest polluter on Earth, the single largest creator of carbon and greenhouse gases, is the United States Department of Defense. Because of all of the fossil fuel that is used for transportation, troop transport, for logistics, and not to mention the tremendous pollution that comes from the bombings, the missiles, and the residue of the explosives. Now, we are here on 5 o'clock Shadow with an audience that I believe is sympathetic to the mission of Dr. King, particularly his courageous stance against the war at the time in Vietnam. And it's my suspicion that it could not have escaped his notice, had he lived, of that salient fact and connected that to the environment. For those who are more familiar with the racial and economic justice initiatives of Dr. King, can you elaborate a bit more about how implicit in all of that is an environmental justice movement?
Yes, well, as you say so rightly, one of the major breakthroughs in Dr. King's prophetic teaching was that historic speech at Riverside Church, when he spoke against the war in Vietnam, even against the counsel of some of his advisors. And in fact, yesterday we took as a major theme of our event a quote from that speech when he said, "The time has come to break the silence." And we addressed that at President Obama and even at the Congress. I mean, it is scandalous that during the whole electoral campaign, for whatever it's worth, the issue was barely mentioned, and it is barely seems to be part of the administration's agenda, although every once in a while there's a little slip of the tongue here and there and a little formal reference to it. And, of course, we have a Congress where there's not even a piece of legislation on the issue. So the time has come to break the silence. But the issue of militarism is absolutely central, Robert, as you suggest, because, among other things, besides their being the greatest polluters in the greatest in the nation, that is the greatest polluter
in the world.
In the world, that's what I meant. Yeah, in the it's a parable there that you know we represent 5% of the world's population and use over 20% of the world's energy. One of the most obscene statistics we can think of. But in addition to that, Robert, is the fact that almost all of those wars are in oil-rich countries or areas. So it is the fossil fuel addiction that is not only destroying the planet through the carbon emission, but is also killing people every day in order to secure our supply of oil, which is dwindling. We send the drones into Pakistan. We murder people and children and families in Afghanistan, and we just expand that, our military outreach monstrosity day by day. And so this is intimately interconnected. But you know, one of the ironies, I might add just parenthetically something most people don't know, is that one of the most trenchant critics of global warming, you know, hypocritical as it may sound, was a report, I think it was by military intelligence as well as the CIA, identifying climate change as one of the greatest threats to national security. You know, recognition, and when the climate really hits the fan, as we are beginning to see, there's just going to be an explosion of environmental refugees by the millions as the ice masses melt in the Andes, and there are more droughts and destruction.
As well as food shortages, popular unrest, and governmental instability.
Yes, exactly. So it's this is something I think that is often lacking in the analysis of the left. It often tends to neglect climate change as an issue, or at best include it in the great fruit salad of good social causes and issues, when I do believe it's becoming clearer that this is central to all the other issues.
Dr. Reverend Father Paul Mayer, I'd like to conclude with a way that people can become more involved. I know that you are the author of a fine piece in the Huffington Post called A New Climate Vision on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. And in the minute or so remaining, can you tell us how people can find that, and also how to become involved with the Interfaith Moral Action on Climate, IMAC?
Yes, Robert, I'm going to be very brief because I do want to say that at the end of our event, a group of people, 18 people, stepped across Pennsylvania Avenue and assumed positions of prayer, blocking some of the entrances to the White House, risking arrest. But interestingly enough, apparently the Obama administration didn't want to have egg on its face concerning Dr. King and the climate. They didn't arrest anybody. So that was perhaps a victory in its own right.
A miracle, as it were.
A miracle, perhaps. But I would indeed like to refer people to our wonderful website, which is interfaithactiononclimatechange.org. Interfaithactiononclimatechange.org. You will find a whole array of resources there. But I do want to say very briefly, as we close, we just had a meeting today where among the new campaigns we are organizing is one working with religious institutions to divest, as they once divested from South African investments, to now, as 350.org is doing it in schools, we want to do it in the religious community. And the second thing that we are going to put forth, carbon pricing, carbon tax, as a moral issue. As Archbishop Tutu said, the polluter must pay.
Well, thank you so much for all of these insights today, Father Paul Mayer of the Interfaith Moral Action on Climate. And I also recommend that people peruse your exegesis of this at Huffington Post. Thank you for being with us today on 5 o'clock Shadow.
Thank you, Robert, for everything you do. Bless you.
This is 5 o'clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York. And we continue our theme today about the global ecological vision, both moral and physical and environmental, that is intimated in a rarely heard speech in the seminal days of Dr. King's career, in fact, delivered on the 28th of February, 1954, in Detroit, Michigan. And it is called Rediscovering Lost Values. And he points at some of the things we've been discussing, wherein he says, and the great danger facing us today is not so much the atomic bomb that was created by physical science, not so much the atomic bomb that you can put in an aeroplane and drop in the heads of hundreds and thousands of people, as dangerous as that is. But the real danger confronting civilization today is that atomic bomb which lies in the hearts and souls of men, of exploding into the vilest of hate and into the most dangerous selfishness. That is the atomic bomb that we've got to fear today.
This is a treat for me because I sing this song a lot, and I'd like to have you sing it with me if you would. This is one that you know because you wrote the melody to it.
Well, let me hear it.
All right. And I think it's wonderful that this particular song, this quotation from Ecclesiastes, is such a well-loved quotation.
Now I know what song it is.
A time to kill, a time to heal, a time to laugh, a time to weep. To everything, turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, turn, turn. And a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to dance, a time to mourn, a time to weave, a time to gather stones together. To everything, turn, 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 there is a season, turn. Time you may embrace, a time to refrain from embracing. To everything, turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, turn, turn. And a time to every purpose under. Time. time of love, a time of hate, a time of deeds. I swear it's not too late.
Everything turned.
There is a season turned, and a time to every purpose under heaven. To everything turned, there is a season turned, and a time to every purpose under heaven.
Proud that makes me.
Oh, Peter, such a beautiful song.
It really does make me proud. You know, I could die tomorrow and I'd die happy in a way to think that other people were singing my songs.
This is 5 O'Clock Shadow for the 15th of March, 2011. In today's program, we'll be looking at the continuing events in Japan in regard to the nuclear disaster there. There is a new explosion. There is a fuel fire in reactor number 4, a new explosion in reactor number 2, following explosions in reactors number 3 and number 1. There may be a containment breach of the inner reactor vessel at one of those devices. We'll be speaking about all of these things with Reverend Paul Mayer, who is a peace activist who has worked for a great many years with the victims of the first atomic tragedy in Japan, Nagasaki and Hiroshima. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and this is 5 O'Clock Shadow. And this is 5 O'Clock Shadow on WBAI in New York, Pacifica Radio for a Change. I'm Robert Knight in New York. And our major topic of the day is, of course, the unfolding nuclear disaster in Japan. Just to recap the barest of details, there was yet another explosion overnight in the reactor number 2 at the Fukushima nuclear facility about 150 miles north of Tokyo. That follows an explosion at unit number 3 over the weekend, as well as an explosion at unit number 1. And there is now concern that the most recent explosion in unit number 2 could have possibly led to a breach of the inner containment vessel within which the nuclear reaction takes place. There was a sudden elevation of radioactivity in the environs of that particular reactor. The Prime Minister learned of the most recent explosion not from a briefing from the Tokyo Electric Company, but by watching television. The Japanese government has scrambled to keep up with events and to, at one time, placate the population and, on the other hand, to try and deal with what may become the largest nuclear disaster in history, outstripping even Chernobyl. We say that because in Unit Number 4, whose walls were damaged by the other explosions, there was a fire. A fire in a pool of spent fuel. These are uranium or uranium and plutonium oxide field rods that are stored in vats of water in order to keep them cool, because there is, you know, the transmission of neutrons and the continuity of a nuclear reaction even after it is withdrawn from the reactor. Well, apparently that heat accumulated, evaporated the water, and it burst into flame. That is even more serious than the release of cesium and iodine through the steam releases through the outer containment chamber, because this is an open-air fire with the release of particulate oxides of radioactive materials. So these are some of the things that are unfolding even as we speak today. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on WBAI in New York. I'm Robert Knight. And just to recap the latest details, Japanese officials say they are seeking international aid to try two zany plans to try and contain the fire in
Reactor Building Number 4 and the possible breach of containment of the reactor vessel in Reactor Number 2. They're going to try and do this with trucks, with water hoses, to shoot a stream of water over the crumbling ruins of the sides of some of those reactor buildings. Alternately, they're planning a Hail Mary play of sending helicopters above the radioactive ground zero and trying to drop buckets of water into the reactor. So overnight, in a period of 3 days, the number of atomic-related mushroom clouds over Japan has more than doubled. 3 more explosions at the Fukushima plant facility, added now to the wartime detonations of the far more immediately deadly atomic bomb explosions launched by the United States at Nagasaki and Hiroshima. In order to get a perspective of what this means on a human scale, we are proud to be joined by Reverend Paul Mayer. He is one of the co-founders of the Climate Crisis Coalition. But perhaps as significantly, he and other peace activists have over a great many years worked and traveled many times to Japan on behalf and in conjunction with the victims of the first nuclear disaster in Japan, the Nagasaki and Hiroshima bombs. And we are happy to have him join us now live here on 5 o'clock Shadow. Father Paul, how are you?
Hey, Robert. Always a pleasure to be with you on, alas, such a on a sad day, heartbreaking day.
How do you put this disaster, the multiple disasters of the earthquake, the tsunami? It's looking like Indonesia. It's looking like Haiti. It's looking like it's looking like World War II. It's looking like injury has been insulted by a reckless campaign of building nuclear power plants at the most volatile earthquake and volcanic zone on Earth. Japan is an accident geologically at the junction of the North American, the Philippine, and the Pacific plates, and it is one of the most volatile parts of the world. And I know that you've been working with people we don't hear about, the opponents of the extraordinary commitment to nuclear energy in Japan. Paul, why don't you just take us through your work with the atomic victims of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and bring us to how that is related to the development and resistance to nuclear power in Japan.
Well, Robert, I mean, just to take it even a step back, the big picture is we have this ancient society, ancient Asian society, which after the tragedies of the Second World War, largely through the occupation, the U.S. occupation, coordinated by General Douglas MacArthur, this was turned into a nation dominated by the Western philosophy and the Western industrial model. And this takes us right back to the, as you indicated, this tiny island has now, as a result of this, has become the third largest nuclear energy power in the world, ironically, and you know, with 55 plants, and as you say, vulnerable on so many levels, and blindly follow the Western model, even though this is a windswept island. There has been virtually no attempt, no official attempt, to pursue the clean energy path. My many visits to Japan, often inspired by invitations from the Buddhist monks, and nuns of the Nipponzan Myōhōji order, who have been working for peace for many years, since their founder was inspired by Mahatma Gandhi, the venerable Fuji-e, who died at the age of 100 a few years back. But on one occasion, I was invited for a speaking tour after the UN special session on this, the first UN special session on disarmament, and by a coalition of religious groups, and ironically, when I took off from Kennedy Airport, it was just about a week after the Three Mile Island accident. So my host in Japan urged me to make the connections between nuclear energy and nuclear weapons. And so I traveled especially through the beautiful island of Hokkaido, which at that time was rarely visited by Westerners. And I always remember one of the many meetings I had with the Japanese public, with the religious community and activists and just ordinary people. But one meeting we had one night in the beautiful little town of Iwanai. At that time, it was surrounded by mountains. It was right on the coast, and gorgeous cherry blossoms. And we met in the fishing cooperative with the fisher folk and the local citizens who had been fighting the construction of a nuclear power plant for about 10 years. And a wonderful nuclear physicist gave a speech warning what could happen. Mind you, this was back in 1979. What could happen with this facility built just 6 kilometers away from a town of 20,000 people right on the edge of the ocean. Of course, what would happen to the fishing situation of the local people by which they make their living? But alas, the plant was built, one of the smaller plants, and not affected by this tragedy, but I think symbolic of the of everything that is happening now. And then I spent a month at that time, and it was a life-changing experience traveling around. And the highlight, the tragic highlight of my visit was definitely my meetings with the hibakusha, as they are called, the radiation-affected people in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, although they have now they live all over the country, and I began to hear the stories, the pain, the suffering. I just finished writing my memoirs and I have a chapter on this, and I just wanted to read one paragraph, you know, of the witness of these noble people. Fumiko Nonaka, a diminutive woman, with the marks of her suffering upon her, was sweeping on Matsukawa Cho Street of Hiroshima the morning of August 6, 1945. She recalled that after the bomb hit, intense beams pierced my face. I felt my body shrink as if it were a dried squid which had been cooked on a fire. After I regained consciousness from the impact and began to walk, I realized that my skin had pulled completely off my body. The burnt flesh of my arms, hands, and fingers were hanging out of my tattered sleeves and drooped down to my fingertips. So, of course, this is one of the more dramatic accounts of these courageous people who survived. And they begged me to carry their message to the rest of the world, and I've been trying to do that in some modest way for many years. But what is significant here is that there were of the hundreds that were killed by the bombing of those two cities, both, I might add, population centers, the vast majority of the people who were affected by this are the radiation sufferers, whose lives were lives of intense suffering. Not only were they the victims of terrible sicknesses, radiation sicknesses, cancer, thyroid diseases, diseases of the immune system. And not only did they live under those conditions, but they were ostracized by the society. They hid their identity because nobody would marry anybody who had, even if they were not disfigured, who had been affected by this, because people knew that, and as, alas, history has borne out, these are genetic diseases that are passed down by generation and generation. I remember one woman telling me that she had had an 18-year-old son whom she loved, and he died of leukemia on one of the anniversaries of August 6th. Down to the grandchildren, down to the third generation, and we don't even know about it because it's so dispersed. But a bitter testimony to this was, lest we think this has nothing to do with what is happening to now, happening at this moment, I remember one of the shocking experiences I had was an exhibit at the United Nations, a brilliant photographic exhibit on Chernobyl, and they had the most stunning and bone-chilling photographs of the survivors, these genetically deformed people and animals, literally people with two heads and all kinds of weird physical phenomena. And this accident is now coming close to this, and you know, and we have no idea. There is a just a report, actually. I think it came out some years back, but it's being revived by the New York Academy of Sciences on Chernobyl. And they report that there are 985,000 deaths. And you can be assured a high percentage of those deaths, because I haven't read the report yet, were from radiation, not people who were killed immediately.
And it takes a long time to find out exactly what the consequences are, which is what makes it so infuriating when news liars say a small amount of radioactivity and other meaningless terms that are designed to discourage information and not to pursue a reportorial duty to have precision in matters of great consequence. We're speaking with Reverend Father Paul Mayer. He's a co-founder of the Climate Crisis Coalition and also a long time with the New Jersey Sea Alliance, which is concerned with nuclear plants in this region of the New York tri-state area, where the U.S. Geological Survey says that we're in an earthquake fault zone and our plants nearby are also susceptible to these things. We're going to take a brief break. And Paul, when we come back, I'd like you to bring it to the conclusion that is useful in regard to not only environmental activism, but pacifism and the nexus between nuclear power plants and weapons, and in particular, having a nuclear empire on one of the most dangerous zones in the world, in the so-called volcanic ring of fire, whereupon Japan is located and has fully invested in a nuclear energy process, and that in the context of President Obama's recommitment to nuclear expansion in the United States. So stay with us, Paul. We want to talk about all of that before we conclude today's show. You're listening to 5 O'Clock Shadow on WBAI Pacific Radio.
Well, love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring. We're bound by wild desire. Well, I fell into a ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, down, down on flames. Went higher and it burns, burns, burns. A ring of fire. A ring of fire.
This is 5 O'Clock Shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York. We're speaking with Reverend Paul Mayer of the Climate Crisis Coalition and also one of the founders of the New Jersey Sea Alliance. And Paul, in the 4 or 5 minutes that we have left, I admonish you to connect the unfolding. You've spoken eloquently and painfully about the history of the atomic bomb in Japan. And in these 4 or 5 minutes, can you just connect the reckless ambition of the Japanese nuclear industry with the reckless announcement of President Obama to expand nuclear facilities here after having said that he wanted to increase offshore oil drilling just before the BP incident? How does that connect, and how does that matter to a man of peace or a woman of peace?
Well, Robert, first of all, we have always maintained that there is this twin-headed monster named after Pluto, you know, plutonium being the principal fuel for this technology, named after Pluto, the god of hell, and the connection between the weapons and the energy. And now we see this, as you have indicated, this conspiracy of silence among the governments, the corporations, and even the news media, you know, holding back. The time has come, I think, for us in the United States, who may indeed be affected by this, because all of this is still uncertain, as you've indicated. But look, just recently, U.S. Secretary of Energy Stephen Chu, who himself is a nuclear physicist, predicted a quote-unquote clean energy future through nuclear power. And President Obama not only supports this technology, but there is a program for a $36 billion loan guarantee to nuclear construction. Compliments of the taxpayer, because because Wall Street, frankly, no longer wants to bankroll this hopeless kind of technology. So they're ahead of the curve in some way. But I think the time has come to build a new nonviolent movement of resistance, and to insist that it is the clean energy path that we must follow, that our government must now begin to subsidize that, that our local legislatures, that this is a way of jump-starting our economy and create jobs. And the Earth will, as we are seeing by all this, will not patiently stand by, you know, while we violate her and destroy our beautiful planet home. And it is tragic to say that once again, the Japanese people unwillingly are becoming the witnesses to this. They have carried to us the most powerful witness of the horrors of nuclear war, and now, alas, they will again become the witnesses of the evils and dangers of nuclear energy. And I always think of the cenotaph, the monument that the people of Hiroshima built in their city to commemorate this, and it says, "The sin must not be repeated." And this is the teaching for us now, to wake up from our technological blindness, our addiction to fossil fuel, and to return to a love for the earth and a courageous opposition to this destructive path.
Reverend Paul Mayer, it has been an illumination to have you here today. Paul Mayer is a longtime peace activist and someone who has traveled many times and worked with the Hibakushas, the victims of the fallout of the Hiroshima and Nagasaki hydrogen and fission bombs that were dropped on Japan, and is just as much involved with concerns about the nuclear crisis there today. And he is a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, and one would be well advised to keep an eye out for his latest piece, Japan's Nuclear Nightmare. Final word, where else might people go to follow your work or to be involved with the human healing between Japan, the United States, and the world?
Well, I should mention, if I forgive me for being self-promoting, but I am just finishing my memoirs, which are just not out yet. They're called Spiritual Memoir of a Political Life, and people can be alert for that. And I soon hope to have a blog out, which I think is paulmayer@blogspot.com. I hope to have that up very soon, and a new website by the name of that book. So people should be on the lookout for that.
Father Paul Mayer with an E. And I thank you for the sensitive time you've shared with us today. This is 5 o'clock shadow on WBAI, Pacifica Radio for a Change. I'm Robert Knight in New York.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you, and we'll be back tomorrow in the 5 o'clock shadow, that which surrounds us all at this time. I'm Robert Knight for WBAI.
Or you could let me run, but I won't ever cry for you. Die for you. Oh, now go. If there's a plan, then tell me. If you know who you are, a princess or a mummy, a flower. So I don't have to cry for you anymore. The days when I will die for you are now gone. Are now gone.
left unsaid. In all the burning letters underneath our bed, saying I won't ever cry for you.
Way back over 50 years ago when I put this song together, I had to rearrange the words in the Bible a little because it didn't all rhyme. But my wife said, we had two children then, age 6 and age 8, she says, you ought to have some verses for children. Well, I said, why don't you make them up? And just this year, way back over 50 years ago when I put this song together, I had to rearrange the words in the Bible a little because it didn't all rhyme. But my wife said, we had two children then, age 6 and age 8, she says, you ought to have some verses for children. Well, I said, why don't you make them up? And just this year, I found it was fun to sing them. A time for work, a time for play, a time for night, a time for day, a time to sleep, a time to wake, a time for candles on the cake. A time for every purpose under heaven. That second verse. A time to get, a time to give, a time to remember, a time to forgive. A time to hug, a time to kiss, a time to close your eyes and wish to everything, there is a season, turn. Now we have some wonderful musicians up on the stage. Want to play? Play a verse. A time to fuss, cry, and make a fuss. A time to leave and catch the bus. A time for quiet, a time for talk. A time to run, a time to turn. There is a season, turn. that's time for every purpose. A time for heaven. Now this is for all children to remember. A time to dress, a time to eat, a time to sit and rest your feet, a time to teach, a time to learn, a time for all to take their turn. To everything. And a time for every purpose under heaven. A time for dirt, a time for soap, a time for tears, a time for hope, a time for fall, a time for spring, a time to hear the robins sing. To
everything, turn.
There is a season. And a time for every purpose under heaven. Oh, I want to hear more harmony to everything.
Turn, turn, turn.
There is a season.
Turn, turn, turn.
And a time for every purpose under heaven.
This is Earthwatch on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. I'm Robert Knight in New York. And in today's tribute to the late and great life of the Right Reverend Father Paul Mayer, a conscience for the generations, we note the inclusion tonight of processional music by Pete Seeger, as performed anti-seriatim at a recent New York City mayoral forum hosted by your host and recorded by Linda Perry. And before that, Pete's musical encounter with Joan Baez on his 1960s TV program Rainbow Quest. And before that, the popular rock version of Turn, Turn, Turn by The Byrds. This is Earthwatch commemorating the life of a great trans-American hero, the late Reverend Father Paul Mayer. And we welcome your comments with an email to your host, Robert Knight, at rknight, that's R-K-N-I-G-H-T, at WBAI.org. That's R-K-N-I-G-H-T at WBAI.org. And for WBAI Earthwatch, I'm Robert Knight in New York, reminding you that, like Father Paul, you too can be a hero.
I'd like to thank and introduce my band, who got together so quickly to do this show for me. I'm forever in their debt. Lead guitar, Kevin Armstrong. Bass guitar, Matthew Seligman. On percussion, Pedro Ortiz. On drums, Neil Conte. On saxophone, Claire Hurst. And on vocals, Helena and Teresa Spring. And on synthesizers and keyboards, the very brilliant Thomas Dolby. like to dedicate this song to my son, to all our children, and to the children of the world. I could be king, and you could be my queen. For nothing could drive them away. Oh, we could beat them just for one day. We could be heroes just for one day. And well, I wish I could swim like dolphins can swim. 'Cause we're lovers, and that's the fact. 'Cause we're lovers, and that is that. For nothing could keep us together. We can beat them just for one day. We can be heroes just for one day. Yeah. We can be heroes. Yeah. We can be heroes. I said. God bless you. You're the hero.
Begin to teach you children by her side, and wonder if you'll share your bed with something else that must be fed. For fear may lie beside you, or it may sleep down the hall, and it might begin to teach you how to give a damn about your fellow man. And it might begin to teach you how to give a damn about your fellow man.
Come and see how well this fair is seasoned by the sprightly air. See a ghetto in the good old sizzling summertime.
Suppose the streets were all on fire, the flames like tempers leaping higher.
Suppose you lived there all your life,
do you think that you would mind? And it might begin to reach you why we give a damn about our.